today on Mother Mayhem.
Because she's a narcissist, she's going to act narcissistically. Your husband knows this. So in this dynamic, it becomes easier to displease you than to displease his mother. And then as a result, you feel like he's chosen her over you. Welcome back to Mother Mayhem, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Podcast for daughters. And for this week, daughters-in-law. I'm your host, Heather Gray. This episode has been on my docket now for a while, and this is a conversation I've really been looking forward to having with all of you, because as many of you listeners know, sometimes it's not your mother who's the narcissist, it's your mother-in-law, and that dynamic and that experience brings up its own pile of hard things to the table. When we're talking about the relationship with you and your mom, you're able to get clear on what you're experiencing or what you have experienced. You then can get clear on all of the ways it's affecting you, and then you're free to decide what you want to have happen next, and then it gets to happen that way. Not that cleanly, but we know it gets to happen. That's the general idea of it. But when it's your mother-in-law causing this kind of toxicity and drama, things can be and feel harder to navigate. You might know what you're seeing and experiencing, but your husband might not see it that way. You might know what you think and feel about all of it, but you might find yourself navigating your husband's feelings about your feelings. And then you might be clear on what you want to have happen next, but anything that happens can largely feel out of your hands and in the hands of your husband. You might be fine rocking a boat and setting limits that your husband might not be. You might be crystal clear that he's being manipulated, but he might not yet see that he is. It is important to remember in this conversation that you are largely dealing with your husband's own trauma brain, and his trauma brain is likely protecting him from the parts of his story that he's not able to see yet. He might still be fearful and traumatized by the idea of going against his own mother. He might have his own set of fears around that. And all of this makes things all the more harder for you, because there you are in this really painful position of first having to bear witness to your husband's past trauma history, while also seeing as it continues to happen in the present for him. So you end up witnessing your mother-in-law's impact on him, on yourself, and for a lot of you in this situation, her impact on your kids. And that, my friends, we know is a whole other entire ball of wax, because you want to protect your kids from her toxicity, but for your husband, that's his mom you're talking about. And that, my friends, is why we call this a good old-fashioned clusterfuck. Finding your way out of it is never going to be a one-size-fits-all solution. Just as there's no one-size-fits-all solution for you daughters. If it were, we'd be having a single episode and we'd all be done the show. This experience is about understanding your experience, coming to know your own boundaries, respecting that this is a trauma for you too, and finding a way to work with your husband on a solution that works for you and for your family. And it is not an easy task. Now, I've mentioned on the show before that my husband and I have been through this ourselves. He's no contact with his mom, and he has been since 2016, but we had been together since 2003. And for those years leading up to no contact, we were working out how to manage his mother without losing us. My experience tells me that it is often a series of trial and error, trying one approach, seeing how it works, how it feels, and then learning and moving on from there. There is no such thing as coming to a realization that your mother-in-law is a narcissist, your husband seeing it clearly, and the two of you paving an easy straight line towards resolution. Maybe it happens like that for some people, and I'm overstepping things a little bit by making that blanket statement by saying no such thing and being all high and mighty like that. So maybe I'll just leave it at, if you're choosing this episode to listen to, chances are this hasn't been true for you or your family either. So today we have two mother-in-law questions. I've decided to tackle them one at a time for clarity and to offer each of these women their own space and their own experience. I have, though, named them Charlotte and Miranda after the Sex and the City characters because I totally picture this to be a topic that two friends would sit in a coffee shop about and talk about. And Lord knows that I've always appreciated the times I could bitch to my friends about the crazy ass things my mother-in-law pulled. You should hear the stories I have about my wedding, friends. Let's hear from Charlotte first, and then I'll find you all of you on the other side of Charlotte's story. So this is what Charlotte had to say. I've been listening to your podcast and gaining so much insight for it, so thank you for that. While my own mother is not narcissistic, my mother-in-law is, and it has greatly impacted my husband and his entire family, as well as me and her children. What specifically comes to mind is how she tries to play games. An example of a game she'll play is asking what's going on during a given week. My husband will, and always does, tell her just way too much information. He will tell her when I have a hair appointment or a doctor's appointment, what the day is, the time is. She does not need to know that information. She will then come over to our house when I'm not there to visit with my husband and the kids. It took me a while to catch on to the fact that she was doing this, and I would sometimes even pass her on my road while I was leaving or returning. Jesus Christ. Once I realized how often this was happening, I called it out to my husband and said I was not comfortable with it. It felt disrespectful, and even asked what was going on, whether it was him or her arranging this. He denied it was intentional. However, it stopped after I called it out until recently. She tried to do it again a few weeks ago, but had car trouble, so couldn't make it during my hair appointment. But she's clearly trying to start doing this again. She also expects my husband to be there for her with whatever she needs, and he will do it. My husband's parents got divorced when he was young. She never remarried and has basically made my husband do all the things around the house she thinks a man should be doing for her. This obviously takes up a great deal of time. Meanwhile, things go undone or I have to take them on at our own house and for our own children. I've spoken with him about this as well, and he agrees he shouldn't have to do it at all, but continues to do it anyway. I would love to hear you talk more about narcissistic mother-in-laws and their impact on families. I feel like I'm caught in a triangle that I don't want to be in. Clearly, I have married into a family that lacks boundaries, and I'm just not sure what else to do. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness, Charlotte, you are absolutely in a triangle that you never asked to be in, and it is likely that your mother-in-law has cast you in a variety of roles inside that triangle within the family as well. And it's clear on how she wants to spend time with your family separate of you being there, because of course she does. She wants her own separate relationship with your husband and your kids, and of course that's hurtful. How could it not be? And regardless of whether or not your husband was a willing participant in that dynamic or not, it is going to be hurtful to watch him participate in it. That makes so much sense to me. Now, I know we already interacted about this issue months ago, and you and your husband are probably a little bit further along in understanding this for one another. But for the rest of you listeners, the process around this starts with talking to your husband. And that can be a really hard conversation. And as you've heard me say on the show, hard conversations are made easier with transparent communication. One of the ways I encourage you to do this is to say to your husband, I have been getting my feelings hurt by some things recently, and I was hoping to share this with you. I was wondering if this would be an okay time to talk. Now, he might immediately think that this is one of those we need to have a talks, and honestly it is, but it's okay to say, no, you and I are fine, but I am struggling and hurting right now, and I need your help in working my way through it. Then once you are together and you have created the space for this conversation, share your experience, your observations, and how they've made you feel. It might go something like, I know this might feel like it's coming out of nowhere, but lately I've been feeling separate from my own family. Recently, I've noticed that your mom's coming to hang out with you and the kids whenever I'm not around. And it feels strange to see that she's waiting for those times when I'm gone to be with you guys. You might not see the pattern, but this is something I'm noticing. Now, again, Charlotte, I know you guys have already talked about this, and I'm going a little bit backwards here, but I want all of our listeners to understand the full process. This is where you might ask him if he's noticed that dynamic and what he thinks of it. He might be neutral about it. He might not have read anything into it, or he might even be a little bit defensive. And this is where you continue on by saying, I very well may be reading too much into this. And if I am, I'm willing to own it. But going forward, I really need you to not share my personal business, our family schedule, with her in such specific detail. That seems to be where you guys landed based on the letter you shared here, Charlotte. But I also want to say that her not knowing your personal information may not be the only boundary you want to have, and that would be okay. It's common for daughters-in-law to feel like it's up to their husbands to deal with their mothers, and that their husband's relationship with their mothers is their business, and that you don't get to have a say. And it can also be a source of significant marital conflict when your husband doesn't see or experience his mom's actions in the same way that you do. And because of this, that's why I want to call your attention to the point I just made. You are sharing with him your thoughts, your feelings, and your experiences. All of those things are perfectly inarguable, and they're not up for interpretation. You just all heard me talk about that in last week's episode. It can be jarring for husbands when they're in this position. They may be totally oblivious to their mom's machinations, and they may be afraid of having a conflict with their mom, and as a result, they may ask you to acquiesce, to just let it go, or to not make too big of a deal of it. This is a common dynamic when the narcissist is an in-law. Your husband likely knows how your mom will respond, and he might fear the conflict or the tension that his mom's going to create about that boundary. She goes crazy when boundaries are set on her, right? Because she's a narcissist, she's going to act narcissistically. Your husband knows this. So in this dynamic, it becomes easier to displease you than to displease his mother. And then as a result, you feel like he's chosen her over you. And of course, it's going to feel like that. How could it not? You have hurt feelings, and he is prioritizing her hurt feelings over yours. There's no way for that not to hurt. But also, I have to be honest with you, that's not the whole story. Because remember what I said at the beginning of this episode, your husband has been in relationship with his mom for his entire life. That means his mother, even if he hasn't known it or didn't see it, has been a narcissist in his whole life. So let me be clear. That means when you are talking to your husband about his mother, his trauma brain is sitting with you at the table. And you have gone some rounds on this topic already. It is likely that your trauma brain is sitting at that same table right along with all of you. So that's why these conversations require so much grace, so much patience, and so much open curiosity. Now, it's tempting to kind of race to judgment. That's our self-protective instinct right there. That's the armor. But what really is needed here is understanding. How does he experience his mom? What does he think and feel about this? And what are the other patterns you have noticed, or what would he like to see happen next? The temptation for both of you is going to be to armor up. And that temptation might be strong, but the goal when we're talking about relationships is to get you guys on the same side. So understanding how he thinks and feels and making sure he understands how you think of and feel is of utmost importance. So I want you to see what I'm doing here. I am making your marriage, your relationship the center. How are we thinking about this? How are we feeling about this? What do we need to have happen next? How are we communicating that? How are we setting the boundary? The way I would encourage you to think about this is as if you were both going to couples counseling, and this is a good idea, by the way. A trained couples counselor can do wonders in helping you navigate these dicey waters, but if you were going to couples counseling, the relationship is the client. So you are thinking and acting as we to the best of your ability. Now, admittedly, you can do your gosh darn very best, and you might find that your husband doesn't budge, that he doesn't acquiesce or yield. And in those instances, I really do actually end up recommending couples counseling. But if you've stayed gentle, you've invited his response, you've listened to him, validated him, and tried to get him to do the same in kind, this is where I would remind you that you, my friends, get to set a boundary of your own. Regardless of what he says or does, your boundary may be set on him. It might be with your mother-in-law, and it might be on both of them, but you get to decide what you will and will not tolerate. And all of this can get really acrimonious when kids are involved. Everything is going to get heightened and everything feels way more intense. So you really do have to go easy on yourselves in these situations. Go slow. Understand for yourselves that this can be an ongoing conversation. It doesn't have to be a fight. You can figure it out together. And here's what I can tell you from my own experiences. Time has a way of making things clear to everyone involved. It's easy to think that if I don't get my husband to see what a crazy loon his mother is in this one conversation, my life is going to be this fight forever. And sometimes, honestly, it can go that way. But oftentimes, when you go easy, when you're gentle, when you reflect your husband's trauma brain, you find a way through these conversations. And the best way to do that is to think back to all of the conversations I've had on this show about your inner child. Because here's a little secret you might have forgotten. Boys have them too. You, in wise mind and present day, may need to talk to the little boy in him. You've heard me say on the show, and you've heard listeners on the show talk about how unnerving it is when you realize your relationship with your mother isn't what you thought it was. And you've heard stories of what it is like when you realize that you have to protect your own kids from your own mother. And that's everything that is going to come up for your husband when you're having this conversation with him. So that is what you need to tend to. Remember too what we know about trauma brain. It puts us in fight, flight, or freeze. And while I've seen some husbands go right into fight mode, more often than not, I observe the flight or the freeze response. They want to avoid the problem. They want to wait and see, or they want to push off on making any real changes. It's okay to say to your husband, "This hurts and this is hard, but you're not doing this alone. We're sitting together, we're figuring this out, and just like you might need to help a little boy deal with a bully, you will have to help your husband." I will tell you, as someone who has walked this path, that it takes patience, it takes grace, and it takes persistence. So you honor your experience, you protect your own peace, and you know what you want to have happen. You might not get there right away, but you can get there. Now, Charlotte, I walked you through all of this, not to give you some lecture on marital conversation, and I really hope you didn't hear it that way, but to pave the way for the next part of the work involved, because that's how he's helping his mom, and how doing so is leaving more on your plate. That, my friend, is its own pile of hurt. And you might understand all that he's managing, but it is still freaking hard and painful and angersome when your husband displeases you in lieu of displeasing his mom. And of course that hurts, and of course you need to deal with it. If you can have some conversations like I've outlined here, it's going to be a little bit easier for you because you'll be able to connect to his trauma brain and help him see how an avoiding conflict with his mom, he's creating new tensions in his own house. However, if his mom and her manipulations really have a hold on him, he may in his bones believe that he is doing what he needs to be doing. He may see himself as trapped or with limited options. And if you're battling that, it is going to be important for you to know where you stand and what your boundaries are, because once you've tried to connect with him, tried to get on the same page as him, and it doesn't work, then you need to let him know what your limits are and what your boundaries are as a result. And that may end up sounding something like, I understand you want to help your mom, and I'm going to ask that you not help her until the critical things for our home are done, instead of going to her first. I am going to ask that you come to us first and her second. Another boundary might be, I'm going to ask that you not help her on Saturdays. If she needs something on a weekend, it has to be on Sunday because I want Saturday for family time. You might need to put a financial limit on this, a time limit on it. However he helps her, you might need to limit that. Now, in my situation, I have to be honest, I lucked out. I hit my limit with my mother-in-law over the very same event that my husband did. But at the time, I didn't know it. He had really been ill, and I had decided I was done with her. But I was going to wait until he was better to tell him. Good timing on my part. So something that I had prepared to do was tell him that I was no longer going to buy him his Mother's Day cards for his mom. I wasn't going to be doing his shopping for him for her birthdays or for holidays. I wasn't going to remind him of her birthday or attend gatherings where she was going to be there. I was no longer going to make having a relationship with her easier for him. He didn't have to go no contact, but I was. Now, I never had to have that discussion because he came to me after the same event and told me he thought he was done. But damn, I spent a lot of time thinking through those boundaries. And I gotta tell you, I was a little bit pissed that I never got to say them. Maybe, though, all that work and all that planning is gonna help some of you think through your limits and your boundaries. You may not get him to see his mother the way you do, Charlotte, but he is bringing the conflict closer to home by not taking care of your home. And you are worth that hard conversation. Your family is worth that hard conversation. Your marriage is worth that hard conversation. And if you guys get to the point where that is the conversation, then that is the conversation and it needs to happen. And I really hope you all will be able to dig deep, show up for yourselves, and have that talk. Now, I spoke at the beginning of the year that I want to help you all stop abandoning yourselves. And this is what it looks like, my friends. This is what it sounds like. And I really hope, Charlotte, that you find some help in that answer. So listen to, because I'm about to help Miranda, and I'm sure there's going to be stuff in her story that you can relate to and things in my response that might also prove helpful. Okay. Whew. All right, Miranda, it's you and me now. You are up next, my friend. And here is what Miranda had to say. Hi, Heather. A little background. I am not the victim of a narcissistic mother, but a narcissistic mother-in-law. I don't have the childhood trauma, but my husband does. I do have trauma considering she's been in my life for 20 years. My husband's father passed away 2 years ago. He was always a buffer for my mother-in-law, and since his passing, my husband's peeled back so many layers and was in grief counseling, which turned into session after session about his mom. who we now have identified as a covert narcissist. He grew up being emotionally abused and fell into lifelong patterns of keeping the peace and bending over backwards to keep his mom happy. He's changed his ways to an extent with the help of counseling, but there's so much to learn about how to actually deal with and communicate with his mother. My husband is the golden child of the family, and therefore his mother has a special level of expectation for him. We see her often and do more for her than anyone else in the family. We make concessions and we do our best to keep her happy, but after 20 years of being together, Thanksgiving may have been the straw that broke the camel's back. This past Thanksgiving, we were also invited to a friend's house for a later dinner. When we told his mother, very matter-of-factly, that we would be leaving at 5:30 to attend the invitation from a friend, she didn't handle it well at all and wouldn't speak to my husband after several attempts to smooth things over. She cried and blubbered on the phone and started smearing us to the family. Even though many of them told her she was wrong, we know as a narcissist she doesn't care. We showed up to Thanksgiving early enough for our children to spend time with cousins. My mother-in-law spent almost the entire time we were there in bed, pouting and out of it because she claimed she took 8 of her antidepressants after we told her the night before and 8 more that morning. We really don't think she took that many. It was an attention-seeking, emotionally abusive tactic bait, and we didn't take it. My 3 children were incredibly confused and even expressed that they felt awkward and it was uncomfortable. My oldest, who's 12, admitted that she lied to my mother-in-law as we were leaving, telling my mother-in-law that she didn't want to go. She immediately confessed in the car and said, "I don't know why I felt like I had to say that or she'd be mad at me." I've personally handled backhanded comments, the jealousy, the silent treatments, and typical behaviors for years, but this time it was evident that it caused physical and emotional stress to my husband, and my children saw the dark underbelly of what their Nana was capable of, and it hit different. Of course it did, sister. Of course it did. I am not sure how to navigate this going forward. My husband is also mad, hurt, and realized that this time it really did go too far. Her behavior is now majorly impacting my children. Currently, she's love bombing my husband via text, but still no apology that we know we won't get. She's also claiming that we weren't even there, and she doesn't remember us being there. That is a lie. She knows we were there. My husband isn't responding to her. What do we do going forward? And how do you explain what is happening to the children? We want to be honest, but how much do we say? Thanks in advance, and I am so sorry for this long message. Do not apologize, people, for taking up space. I did my best at giving the Cliff Notes version because, as you can imagine, there are many more layers to this. Okay, hi, Miranda. Now, I know you and I have already had an exchange about this letter, and we've gone back and forth a couple of times since you wrote it. And I know that you and your husband have actually been in counseling together and have been finding your way with this way more successfully. And I'm really, honestly, I'm so glad to know that. Even though your crisis here has passed, I really have to say thank you for allowing me to still use your letter to speak to the issues you raised and to help others navigate situations like this and to find their way with it. Now, there's a lot I want to cover with you here, and I want to help all of you try to organize and wrap your heads around this because there are several different threads to this story that deserve attention. Miranda, we have your own trauma experience of simply witnessing your husband's trauma. Bearing witness to what his mom has put him through over the years isn't easy. And as we know, it affects people. Your husband, let's keep it with the Sex and the City theme here, and I'm just going to call him Steve. Steve has been affected by his mom. He has his own trauma brain responses of fight, flight, or freeze. And that can't always be easy, first to be around, but also to navigate. But here's the thing. Steve's trauma brain in fight, flight, or freeze may be afraid to confront his mom or set boundaries on her. His trauma brain may tell him different stories than what you observe. You might hear him making excuses for his mom, showing allowances and patience for her that you don't have or think that she deserves. So like Charlotte, you may be in this place where you have to have this conversation with Steve about the boundaries you have yourself. And it is really hard to set boundaries on someone when you know that their trauma brain is running the show. You probably, well, I know you do because we talked about it, but you feel for Steve and you know how hard it is for him and you don't want to make it harder, but still you also do need to protect yourself. And then we have the two other big things to deal with, and we have to put them on the table right away. First, we have the impact that your mother-in-law is now having on your kids and how she's making them feel. Then, almost unimaginably, your mom put suicide on the table. At worst, she made a suicidal gesture and made her whole family, including your kids, bear witness to it. In the least, she implied she could commit suicide. And if she did it, it would be because your husband changed Thanksgiving plans. The cruelty in both of these scenarios is awful. I'm going to start with the worst first, because as much as I wish this weren't true, Miranda, this is something that narcissists do. And just 2 weeks ago, I had another letter from a listener where this was also the issue. I know that people get held hostage when suicide comes up, and of course they do, because this is some scary stuff we're talking about. My husband's mother pulled countless stunts around this, and it was brutally painful for him and for us every single time. It's incredibly hard to know what the right answer is, because there's no such thing as a narcissist who's emotionally stable. So just in this conversation alone, you know that sometimes she wants you talking to her. And seconds later, you could be talking too much, not talking about the right things, or not giving her enough attention. So feeling like her life is in your hands, or merely having it implied that it's in your hands, becomes a ginormous clusterfuck. How do you guess right when her right answer changes so quickly and so reliably? Here's what you need to know. Her life was never in your hands. No matter what she says, we do not have that kind of power. You can't keep her alive by acquiescing to her threats. While it might seem contradictory for someone with narcissistic traits to imply that someone else's behavior makes them want to die, it is essential to understand that narcissists use these tactics to maintain power and dominance and control over other people. Suicide or threats of suicide are the very same thing as any other manipulative tool or tactic that a narcissist might be using to gain that sense of power, control, or attention. They do it to be manipulative, to seek attention or sympathy, and to play the victim. The first step for dealing with this is a tough one. It's separating your feelings from the situation and separating your sense of responsibility from the reality of your responsibility. Here's what I teach my clients to do. Instead of thinking and using the words, "My mother-in-law is threatening suicide right now," switch them to name the behavior. My mother is attention-seeking right now. My mother-in-law is playing the victim right now. My mother is playing on my feelings of responsibility right now. My mother-in-law is playing on my husband's feelings of responsibility right now. When we name the intention behind the behavior, we can have an easier time separating ourselves from the impact of her words and actions. And you're gonna need that separation so you can get really clear on what it is you want to do. And what you're doing here is using really flat affect, staying neutral, and giving minimal attention. "Mom, you're saying you want to die. Should I call 911 for you? Mom, you're saying that you don't want to live. I don't have experience with this. Do you need to go to the ER?" Give minimal attention. Don't engage. Don't beg her to change her mind. Don't reassure her of your love for her. Don't do any of those things. You are not watering this behavior with any kind of love, positivity, or nurturance. You're giving minimal attention. You're not engaging. You're not keeping her company, and you're not checking up on her. All of this makes me sound like a gigantic asshole, and I get that. Here's what I also say. So if you already think I'm an insensitive jerk, you're really going to love this. Because the next thing is, again, with neutral, flat affect. It must be hard wanting to die. I hope you don't make that choice. I'm going to go now. Are you managing this alone, or do you need me to call 911? Now, I know that this is graduate school level boundaries, but here's the thing. Your mom can choose an unsafe action at any point in time. And I have known mentally unwell people to choose such actions simply to further manipulate and control the situation. I know my mother-in-law did. My husband didn't call her back in time, and we ended up visiting her in a psych ward after. Why did he not call her back in time? He was in class and didn't get the phone call until after class had ended. It's a horrifying place to be in, but we're not superheroes. Like, we don't have that kind of power. We do not possess the ability to keep people alive. That isn't in our power. We don't have it. So if you acquiesce to her demands, her threats, or her gestures, you're abandoning yourselves. I have been in this conversation with clients so often, and I know that what I'm saying is really super hard to believe, and it is incredibly hard to act on, and I know this, but also I have to be honest with you, knowing that it's hard for all of you, it doesn't change my opinion. If you have legitimate fears that your mom is going to take action or could take action, engage the professionals. Call 911. And then, my friends, disengage. Don't go to the hospital. Don't speak to your mother. That is not a way she can get your attention. When dealing with issues of suicide, you disengage in the same way I would encourage you to disengage with gaslighting, smear campaigns, or lying. That being said, suicidal gestures and threats do have a way of getting attention. And when they don't, narcissists are really good at calling attention to their threats and gestures. So you might end up getting calls or texts from extended family, from siblings, other concerned people who've gotten word about your mother's pain. Remember what I've said in earlier episodes about this when we talk about smear campaigns. Don't engage. Just say, yes, it's true. My mom was upset that I did this or I said that. And as a result, she's reporting that she wants to die or has plans to die. I've asked her if she needs professional help and she's declined. If you're concerned, you are encouraged to call 911, but I know that we don't have the training to interfere. She wanted me to stay and I opted not to. Don't explain yourself. Don't defend yourselves. Don't engage in debates. This is too hot button of a topic, but people are going to try to absolve themselves of their own sense of responsibility by putting it back on you. And I urge you to remember, it is not yours to accept. It never was. So if you have credible, realistic threats that you're dealing with, or if you're worried and you don't want to be the person who decides whether or not a threat is credible, call 911, let them know the situation, and then disengage. I promise you, that is the answer. You cannot keep people alive or stop them from manipulating you with their lives or their threat of their lives. We just don't have that power or control. And when we're talking about suicide, when we're talking about people's ability to be impulsive, to do something without thinking, to take quick action, it's best that the professionals are the ones to do this. So use 911. Lean on 911 always. Now, working backwards in your letter, let's talk about your kids. Oh, actually, guys, you know what? Scratch that. We all need a deep breath. This is hard, hard shit we're talking about. This is like one of those times when we have to take one of those deep breaths from the bottom of our toes to the top of our heads and out a little bit. And I would encourage anybody who just listened to this whopper of a story so far, if you need to take a pause in this episode, in this conversation, and thinking about this, that was a whole hell of a lot right there. And I would encourage you to take a break if you need one. Obviously, take the break. Do the regulating things, come back to it, don't come back to it, whatever you need is okay. But I'm going to continue because that's what I do here on the show. Let's talk about the kids, because here's the thing about kids. What a lot of adult clients are willing to do for their kids, they aren't willing to do for themselves. It's hard to protect yourselves from your mothers and from your mothers-in-law with boundaries and limits, but you can do that for your kids, and I encourage you to take advantage of that fact. Kids reacting to the narcissist or having feelings about the narcissist might very well make it easier for you to set boundaries with your mom and with your husband. You listen to them, you validate their experience, and you remind yourselves that your mothers and your mothers-in-law are not entitled to relationships with your kids any more than they are entitled to relationships with you. So, as far as explaining this to kids, I really believe in telling kids the truth. Grandma said and did some scary things over Thanksgiving. I'm sorry you had to deal with that. What did you see? What did you hear? What did that make you think? Does that make you have any questions? See what they experienced. Validate what they experienced. Correct any stories that they might have and answer any questions they might have. Remember too, with kids, just stick to answering the questions asked. It's tempting to give them so much more information, and it's equally tempting to try to protect them by saying nothing. Stick to the facts, remind them that they're safe, and then answer the questions asked. This is hard, hard stuff. The kind of hard stuff that often leads to stricter boundaries. And I can't think of a time when stricter boundaries isn't called for in situations like this. Here's what I'm also going to remind you of. This is generational curse-breaking stuff. This is powerful. Teaching your kids that their discomfort is reason enough to change a relationship with their grandparent is powerful. It's powerful for them, for you, and for your husband. Changing the way people in your family deal with her is so hard and is so scary, but also think about how it is changing future generations. The power here and the possibility is honestly quite incredible. We tell kids the truth, we validate their truth, and we honor their feelings of safety above all else. And when you do that for them, you're doing it for yourselves too, because we are all just grown-up kids, and what kids need is no different than what we need as adults. This is inner child work in real time. Miranda, if Steve can listen to your kids on this, hear their questions and concerns, and respond, he will be doing his own inner child work in real time, watching himself take care of his own kids and listening to his own kids in a way that no one did for him is going to be really intense. It'll likely come with a lot of grief for him, but it really can be so powerful and so incredibly life-changing. Now, I want to talk about your trauma, because being on the receiving end of your mother-in-law's wrath, watching her impact on your husband and your kids, it is incredibly painful. And I can tell, you know, you've been seasoned to it quite a bit, and maybe you're even a little bit numb to it, but you have been through years and years of trauma yourself with her. You yourself might end up caught in fight, flight, or freeze, but you also have likely experienced a lot of times in your marriage and in your family life of not being chosen. And what sucks about this is daughters-in-law are often easier to disappoint than the narcissistic mothers. You heard me say that earlier with Charlotte. So that means that your husband has likely risked disappointing you over disappointing his mother. So not being chosen, not coming first in your own home can feel like real abandonment and rejection. It is wounding and it is confusing because it is abandonment and it is rejection, but it's also happening because you can see your husband's heart because he cares so much. So he's not choosing you to be a jerk. He's not choosing you because he thinks it's the only way he can take care of his mother, or keep his mother alive, or whatever to do with his mother. And again, I want to remind you as I share these stories, my mother-in-law isn't narcissistic. She's significantly mentally ill, but she uses those same tactics as narcissists do. And I know for me that being a therapist, I often felt like it was on me to understand the dynamic, to know that she was so ill, and to just be okay with however it needed to go. So whatever my husband needed me to acquiesce to or to help with, I was supposed to be okay with it because I knew how difficult she is and all the struggles she has and all the ways people like her can have a hard time. Also, my husband, I have to tell you, often became an asshole when dealing with his mom, but not with his mom, with me. He'd either shut down on me and go radio silent, or he would take his irritability that he felt towards her out on me because I was the safer person to do that with. And I promise you, this was not my most favorite time in my life or my favorite story to have to tell. And I assure you, I was watching him be impacted by this, but also I was starting to bear the brunt of that impact, which of course led me setting some really hard and firm boundaries around what I was willing to put up with and what I wasn't. And the clear impact she was having on our marriage was a major impetus for him going no contact. Understandably so, she dysregulated him. A lot of you experience that. You get dysregulated by your mothers. She was horrid in countless ways, from demands for money to heat her home, to being able to eat, to threats of death. One of the boundaries we set at one point is that we would only see her in public because she would act better in public. We once had a meal at a restaurant and it was perfectly fine. And it was perfectly, and I say this with air quotes as I talk, healthy. She went to the restroom and we were like so proud of ourselves. We had finally gotten it right. She came back to the table with her hand shaking, holding a letter that honestly looked like a therapist had helped her write. And she sat and read it to us. And God help us, she asked us for a car. In that letter, she went so far as to say that she would leave our lives forever if we would just give her a car. That's what a relationship with her son meant. She would trade it in for a fucking car. 6 months later, we were no contact. Thank goodness. But I have to tell you guys this story because I can. It's my show. So forgive me if I've repeated this one already. As you guys get to know me, I do repeat myself and tell stories ad nauseum. My husband could tell you that too. If you've already heard this, I'm sorry. But once we had decided, I just shared with you how we would only meet in public and at restaurants. I would call the restaurant ahead of time and I would say, you know how some mothers and mother-in-laws can be really impossible? Well, we have ourselves one of those. Feel free to tell the server and the kitchen to move quickly. And we'd sometimes get in and out in less than an hour. And I did it a couple of times before I even confessed to my husband that I had been doing this. We were driving home and he commented, wow, we have to go to that place every time. We were out in 45 minutes. And I had just lost my shit laughing. And then, of course, I had to confess. Good times, good times. Sometimes I do like having a show of my own. Thank you for walking down memory lane with me. And again, every time I joke about this, I always feel like I have to add the caveat. That doesn't mean that I think that this is funny. That doesn't mean that I don't know all of the serious hurts and pains underneath. But I do think that laughter can help us ease the tension. Laughter can help us validate the insanity of it all, the ridiculousness of it all. And it releases the pressure. So as self-conscious as I get about being a therapist ridiculously laughing into a podcast mic about her mentally ill mother-in-law, I do still think it's important. And I hope that 37, however many episodes we're in at this point, that you all know me and you know my heart and you trust me to know that I'm not thinking that any of this is funny or shouldn't be taken seriously. But I do think that in a show where we've talked about mother-in-laws using threats of suicide and kids feeling like they have to lie to their mother-in-law, or their grandmother rather, I do think it's also important that we allow ourselves and give ourselves permission to use a bit of levity. And I hope you all receive that with the intention that I sent it. All of this to say, Miranda, that you aren't just managing your mother-in-law. You're caretaking for your family after your mother-in-law leaves her mark. And I do know from our private exchange that you're bringing this to the couples counseling table, and I want to use this as an opportunity to encourage other daughters-in-law of narcissistic mothers to do the very same thing. Bring your experience to the table. You're going to be tempted to take care of your husband and your kids, but you matter. You need to put the oxygen mask on yourselves first. Everybody likes to think that boundaries and limits just come to you. Someone's unacceptable to you and you set the boundary and you're done. But we know it doesn't work like that because it doesn't feel like that. This shit is complicated. My husband and I met in 2003. And we didn't go no contact until 2016. And we did visit his mother after a suicide attempt in a psych ward. She pulled it after her boyfriend broke up with her. So I know the right answer takes time. It is not a straight line, and you don't always find your footing right away, but it is possible to stay connected with your husband, to protect your family and marriage with good conversation, firm boundaries, and hopefully the help of a therapist to help you navigate it all. This is hard, my friends. Charlotte and Miranda, you are managing a lot. I see you. You have a community of women around the world who see you and who are in it with you too. I, of course, always am too. Hang in there. Truly. Bye for now. I'm so grateful that you're here. You're right where you're supposed to be. At its heart, I'm hoping to use this show to build a community of women working together to heal from childhoods marked by maternal narcissism and emotional neglect. My goal for Mother Mayhem is that this show becomes an advice and mentoring-driven show where you share your questions, struggles, and stories, and I offer you direction for healing and recovery. That can't happen without your contributions. I invite you to send a recorded voice memo or write in an email with your questions and things you're struggling with. You can always find me over at heather@daughtersnpd.com. To connect further, I invite you to find me over at Instagram and occasionally on TikTok at DaughtersNPD. If you know another woman who needs this conversation in her life, I'm going to ask that you share the show with her. You can help me get the word out with your reviews and social shares of the show, and I hope you'll consider doing so. Special thanks to Heather Clark for editing this show. She's in my head and knows what I meant to say when the words come out backwards. Thanks for your time today. I'm always in it with you. Bye for now.